You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
This is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
It is yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. I'm your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from rainy but beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia. Joining me, as always, Mr. Brendan Lear. How are you doing, Brendan?
I'm very well, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We had you on the last show, the first show this week. I didn't get to hear your thoughts on the UFC, so in order to give all your fans what they want to hear, we'll talk to you a little bit about UFC after we talk to Matt Serra and John Fitch, who are going to be on the show.
Don't patronize me, Kelsey.
Sorry, buddy. It just comes naturally talking to you. We've got Matt Serra and John Fitch.
How many shows have we done? 50 shows. And then, Pride happens. UFC happens. And I'm replaced by some giant rodent.
Yeah, wombat.
What is a wombat? Is that a rodent? Or wombat?
I think I asked him that, and I believe it's some kind of creature that lives in Australia. I don't think... I'll leave it to Wombat to tell the story behind his nickname, but it's not as interesting as one might think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's not some kind of... some kind of trick you can do with your scrotal skin?
That's just a horrible, horrible start to the show.
Well, I've heard, some guys have the nickname of Flying Squirrel or Swordfish. I thought it might be one of those.
Did you see Waiting, the movie Waiting? There's a lot of bits about that.
Yes.
Ryan Reynolds and Anna Faris.
Only people who have ever worked in the service industry understand that movie, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably true in a lot of respects. Funny movie, though, and we should get paid for plugging it like we just did, but it's got some funny bits.
We should get a slice of the DVD sales.
Right. But like I mentioned, we got Matt Serra and John Fitch coming on the program. That's a pretty good lineup of two welterweight contenders in the UFC, so those guys will be on the show. John Fitch, of course, fought at the UFC 68 recently, big win over Luigi Fioravanti. And Matt Serra is set to take on George St. Pierre April 7th, Brennan, so hopefully those guys will have some interesting comments for all the listeners.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's get to it.
Oh, thanks for stealing my line. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
The best offer MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter Shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
Hi guys, this is Jeff the Infernal Joslin, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Terror, Matt Serra. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good, bro. How's everything, man?
I can't complain. How are things out in New York treating you?
Good, man. Going to train right now, matter of fact.
Yeah.
Life is good.
Yeah,
getting ready for the big day.
Of course. April 7th, Matt Serra is going to be fighting George St. Pierre for the welterweight championship of the world. Matt, how is training coming along?
It's going great, man. I'm getting hard sparring, great training, no injuries right now, and that's good, I'm just having a good time, man, enjoying the training, enjoying every moment of it.
You know, we had one of your good training partners and friends, Pete Sell, on the program a little while ago, and he kind of made a comment about the fact that, a lot of people aren't really giving you perhaps the credit that you deserve. The people are maybe looking past this fight for George, talking about his rematch with Matt Hughes, etc. How do you feel about that, Matt? Do you see it that way as well?
I definitely see it that way, and I'm totally fine with it. I like that. I mean, you know, hopefully, you know, he's listening to the people around him and the popular opinion and not taking me the way he should be. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't really mind that. I mean, I know some people believe, you know, what I could do, and I don't mind that the majority of people don't, because, you know, I do, and I'm the guy in the cage, so that's all that really matters, you know?
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, you know George somewhat. We've had George on the show as well, and he, of course, sort of told the party line. He's taking you as a great threat. He's training. This is the hardest he's ever trained, he's saying. Knowing George, and somewhat, I guess you do, do you get that sense from him? Do you think that he's the type of guy that might look past you, or do you think he's someone that's probably taking you for real?
I think that he's a professional, and, you know, he's mature for his age, and I'm sure he's going to train the right way, but I don't think he's going to train with the urgency as if he's fighting Matt Hughes. You know what I mean? You know, I could be wrong, you know, and All I could really concentrate on, I really can't control or concentrate too much on what he's doing. I just got to concentrate on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know I'm going to go in there in the best shape possible and having all the bases covered, you know, and that's pretty much all you can do in this game is show up with your A game, try to be mentally and physically where you should be, and let it all hang out and go for it, and that's what I plan on doing, man.
And let's get a little bit more into the specifics of that. Is this going to be a Matt Serra, classic Matt Serra fight where you want to take George down and work your jiu-jitsu game, which, of course, is well accomplished?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, George is probably a better wrestler than me. So, I mean, I can't make it like an Amory Patech versus Don Fry fight where you try to get the guy down full blast and then you run out of steam and then you're getting hammered. I mean, you know, I have enough experience where, you know, I'd rather, you know, hey, listen, in a perfect world, we'll touch gloves and he'll jump guard, but that's just not going to happen, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, I mean, I'm covering all the bases, man. You can't be stressed no matter where it is, you know? And I got my strategies or whatever to where I wanted to go, and, but you know what? At the same time, I'm not going to be stressed, you know, where it ends up.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about your last fight prior to this. It was against Chris Lytle, and when you got to that decision and your hand was raised, were you confident, Matt, that prior to the decision being announced that you had won that fight?
Oh, was I confident that I won the fight with Chris?
Yeah.
I mean, I felt that, you know, I was more aggressive and, you know, everything else. I mean, it's kind of a rough subject, man. Hold on. I'm sorry. The cop was right there. I had to put the phone down. It's kind of a sticky situation, man. I like Chris a lot, man. And I don't want to do anything to discredit him as a fighter or anything else. But, I mean, look, it was a split decision. I got a little nervous when he probably thought he won and I thought I won. It was definitely a close call. I got nervous when one judge gave it 30-27 to him after the first judge gave 30-27 to me. I got, like, I didn't know where they'd go, you know? So that was a relief because, you know, you don't know what judges are watching or how they're looking at it or whatever, but two judges saw it in my favor and one judge didn't. And, you know, I had close calls go in the other direction for me, and if it was a close call or a close fight and it went in my direction, then, you know, hey, it's about time. It's fine, you know.
Did you get a chance to see Chris's fight against Matt Hughes?
Of course I did. I had actually, he was in New York. We were filming a TV show, a talk show, Dr. Keith, that'll probably be air sometime in May or something. But we shot a talk show that a week prior, and I actually had I had dinner, me and my fiance and him and his family, you know. I like Chris a lot, you know. I'm inviting him and his wife to my wedding coming up, and he's just such a great, great guy, and I love this fight. I thought this fight with Matt Hughes, well, I thought he did phenomenal. I thought he'd be great. You know what I mean? People thought Matt Hughes was going to run through him. I definitely, from rolling with Chris, I knew that that he was going to be a handful for Hughes, and I thought I was predicting guillotine, and it almost happened, man. I was on my feet, you know.
Yeah.
And I was really rooting for him because he's such a good guy, and I want the best for him.
Was that the Matt Hughes you kind of expected? You know, the people, there's speculation as to whether Matt was going to try to come out and perhaps stand. He's gone on the record saying he wants to get a knockout, and that was one of the criticisms some people had.
I think that he was going to be smart, you know, not to stand with Chris. I think that, you know, him trying to do the knockout stuff, it's not really working for him too great. So I think he's getting the idea where, I think he needed to win, and if anything, he fought the smarter fight for himself, you know? But not for nothing, though. I mean, I never complained about stand-ups or anything like that, but, you know, they, like, use stay close on Chris doing, you know, minimum stuff, and they stood me and Chris up pretty quick. I mean, whatever, man. I don't want to really bitch about that, but it's just, you know, something to be consistent is what we're looking for, you know?
Well, I know you don't want to look past George St. Pierre, but obviously if you were to win and become the champion, then it would look like you would fight Matt Hughes next. Matt, much was made about some of the comments you made about Matt Hughes during the reality show, and it sort of raised the ire of some of Pat Miletich's fighters. We had Tim Cilio on the show, and he made a point of commenting on the way your interactions with Matt during the show and some of the things you said.
I didn't hear that. What did Tim say?
You know what? I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was such a good quote, Matt. We'll have to go into the Full Contact Fighter archives because it was actually printed in the paper itself.
Well, what did he say? Did he say something rude about me or something?
Yeah, it was less than flattering. Let's put it that way. It was I wish I had the comment. But
you know what's funny, man? Like Matt Hughes, Tim Sylvia, I used to be pretty friendly with those guys. Like I put on the call with those guys plenty of times, and I don't know, man. I just think guys, after a while, they get big heads, and they start thinking that their shit don't stink, and it goes into that rut. I mean, they become different people, or maybe they were those people to begin with. I was more acquaintances with them, but I always got along with them. And then, you know, I mean, if Matt Hughes is acting like a bully and a jerk, I'm going to say he's acting like a bully and a jerk. I mean, that's it. You know what I mean? This is something I'll say right to him. I don't like the way he was treating GSP. It's not like I'm sticking up with GSP or nothing, but I mean, he was being a real dick to him in the restaurant. He's got that arrogant attitude, man. Yeah. And Tim Sylvia, he's a dick too. Fuck him. I don't care how big he is. You know, that's another guy. I mean, dude. Oh man, now we're gonna see him walking around, this is the first time we're gonna see him walking around without that belt on. I'm glad Randy beat his ass. I'm cool with everybody, man. I treat people the way I want to be treated, but, you know, if they want a problem with me, man, then fuck them.
Yeah, like I said, I should have, this just shows
me. Are we able to curse on this thing? I don't know if I'm going to be getting bleeped out or anything.
Well, you know, that's a great
area. I'm sorry, man. I'll clean it up, you know. You got me. I just took an energy drink and I'm about to go in there and spar. Again, these are guys that I got along with in the past, and then, you know, all of a sudden they get stuck up, you know, and they start acting a certain way. I'm talking to certain guys. I ran to somebody. I don't want to put nobody on the spot. At an airport when I was down for like that UFC, which UFC was that? With Chuck Fortito. I was down there to promote when I was going to fight George before he got injured. And I ran into a guy from the Miletich camp. And he said, I'm friendly with him. I don't want to mention names. I don't want to get nobody up, put anybody on the spot. And he's like, hey, what's up? He's with his girlfriend. I'm like, hey, man, I'm surprised we're so cool, you know, since I, you know, called Matt, he's a dick and all. And he's like, hey man, a lot of the guys here would agree with you. The guy, you know, did get stuck up and this and that. I mean, so it's like, you know, I'm not the only guy thinking this way, and I think a lot of guys would agree with me. You know? Hey man, I don't think there's anybody that I fought that I don't get along with, let alone the other fighters. You know? You got guys like DJ, I don't know, man. Matt Hughes, I can go on all day long about the way he treats people, man. I mean, let's ask him if Jesus would treat people the way he's treating them. The guy's so into, you know, God. I mean, you know, why don't they start treating people a little bit better? What about after that happened with BJ Penn? You know, he's like, oh, you know, I mean, BJ Penn, you know, I like BJ a lot. He's a good guy. whatever, man. I mean, you know, after BJ beat him that first time, BJ gave nothing but praise to the guy. And then after he beat, whatever happened with him and BJ, he's sitting there saying, oh, you know, too bad he's not in shape to go five rounds. You know what that is? That's a dick. That is a dick. So that's all I got to say.
Well, for any of the listeners, if you want to listen to the interview with Tim Sylvia, just go to the Full Contact Fighter website, which they probably downloaded it from this show from, and then I think it was Tim Sylvia's last appearance. So if people want to listen to it yourself, Matt, we have all the archives up there under the FCF radio section, www.fcfighter.com. And people can listen to that interview with Tim. And I guess the reason I brought that up, though, was not just to stir the pot, but to get out of you the difference, the contrast that it would be, Matt, for yourself, preparing for someone like George. Like I said, we had George on the show, and he said everything was very amicable. He respects you a lot. There's no issues between the two of you. Versus if you do defeat George and you have to fight Matt Hughes, obviously it sounds to me like there'd be a different kind of preparation due to the way you feel towards each fighter, correct?
I mean, you know, I like George, you know, I do. He's a good guy, and it's just going to be cool. You know, but I also like Chris a lot, you know, so if anything, I consider myself a little closer with Chris than I am with George, and I had to fight him, you know, and, you know, one of the biggest things with Chris was when I had to fight him, I mean, I was so happy that I won, but at the same time, I was a little upset that, you know, there was such a big difference in the second place in that thing, you know, it was a close fight, and now often, you know, I'm making a nice amount of cash, and he's not even getting like a tenth of it. And it's like, oh, man, I know the guy's situation. We were, you know, the guy's doing well for himself, but you know what I mean. Yeah. I just kind of felt bad that way. Not that I got the W, but that there was such a big difference in the money and everything. And that was one of the hardest things, you know. But the thing now with me and George, it's strictly business. And if I was going to fight Matt Hughes, you know, I mean, again, it's easy to, you know, this is a contact sport. It's easy to hit someone in the face that you don't like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you got to go in there like business. And, again, yeah, with Matt Hughes, you know, I guess it might be a little more motivating because, you know, of course, the guy is look the way he acts.
Well,
oh, God, he's so arrogant.
Well, last question for you, Matt. We'll move beyond that. That's obviously a sore spot. Although that was for some.
Nah, hey, man, I don't care. I'll talk about whatever, man.
No, that was some good radio we had going there, buddy. That's you come back, you have the reality show. What did that mean for your career? You know, you were one of the more popular fighters on that show. I think it's safe to say you sort of took charge of your team. You're one of the head instructors, almost in a sense. Have you noticed that difference for you? Was there more of celebrity for you, so to speak, after leaving the show? What's life like for you now, Matt?
Yeah, you know, it's a lot different. I mean, I walk around Manhattan and I get stopped, and even in Long Island here, I mean, at the 7-Eleven or the Starbucks, it's weird because I've been fighting on the pay-per-view for so long, and once in a while you run into a fan or you get to feel a little bit of that, like, yeah, I don't want to say celebrity, but like, you know, like, you get noticed here and there from, you know, like fans like the week of your fight at the hotel because they're all diehard fans, but you don't usually, you know, get it on such a wide scale, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all over the place. I was doing a seminar in Atlanta and I was at a gas station and a guy came up to me. It's just, you know, I like it. It's nice. And but most importantly, you know, it helps out my schools. I teach, you know, for full time. And I love teaching, and it really helped my enrollment. And, you know, I'm going to be fighting for a while. I enjoy fighting, but I'll be coaching way longer than I'll be fighting. So I didn't go in there expecting to show off any kind of coaching skills or anything. It just kind of worked out that way, you know? So, I mean, the fact that worked out, that was like an unexpected, like, plus. I didn't know that. I mean, especially coaching Shoney. I didn't expect that. I mean, but it worked out great, and, you know, I have nothing but a positive, you know, experience from that show. I think it made me a better fighter. It opened my eyes up to different guys in the game, like where, you know, their struggles and you know, I made some good friends in that house and you know, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah,
I guess because I wouldn't change a thing.
We had Dean Thomas on the show and I asked him, his thoughts on it. And one thing that we sort of, and Brendan, my usual co-host, was with us as well. One thing we asked him was, did he find that the one thing that was good about it, there's so many new fans to the sport, the so-called Ultimate Fighter generation, that perhaps sort of missed some of your guys' encounters back in the day, so to speak, 5-6 years ago. And he said that was one thing that he really appreciated, is now there was somewhat of a renewed interest in some of the older fights that featured yourself, Shoni Carter, Dean Thomas, some of BJ Penn's earlier bouts. Has that been your experience too, Matt, that people, some of the newer fighters, because of the comeback show, the last season of Ultimate Fighter, started to look into the older UFC fights where perhaps maybe they wouldn't have otherwise?
Yeah, but you know what it is. I mean, they might actually have short memories with it, and it's really, really getting super popular from the Spike TV show. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that really, people who've never watched it before, like, not buying pay-per-views, they're now buying pay-per-views because they get into it from that show on Spike. They're like, man, this is great. You know, they love it. So it's like, it's nice that the guys have been around, you know, not only that, but all of a sudden, you know, I've seen people, like, I ran into some high school, so I'm like, man, I didn't even... They also know my whole career because of the show, because they go through everything.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm going to tell my trainer. I got a Full Contact Fighter doing an interview real quick. I'll be right in, though.
You are out of your bird.
See that? You hear my trainer? He's crazy.
Yeah.
But listen, I'll be right in. You are nuts. You're out of your mind. Dude, you're out of your mind. My trainer's nuts. Sorry about that, man.
It's okay.
Good.
All right.
But, you know, Dean Thomas, that's another guy, man. He's actually doing phenomenal now, man. I mean, he has some great, you know, people got to see him, you know, he's one of the most talented guys out there, and I'm glad he's getting his due, mm-hmm. You know?
Well, Matt, it sounds like, you know, we're keeping you from your training. You got a big fight coming up, of course. Matt Serra taking on George St. Pierre April 7th in Houston, Texas. Matt, we appreciate you coming on the show, man, and best of luck coming up.
Hey, man, I appreciate it, dude, and, you know, you give me a call anytime.
All right, man, thanks a lot.
Take care, dude.
Take care.
Later, bro. Bye-bye.
Live at the LA Forum, March 17th, 7:30 p.m., the International Fight League brings you four of the world's best mixed martial arts teams battling head-to-head. Brazilian legend Marco Ruas leads his Southern California Condors against Ken Yasuda's Tokyo Sabres. Plus, Frank Shamrock pits his San Jose Razor Claws against Buzz Rutten's LA Anacondas in a North-South rivalry. Get your tickets now at the Forum box office or Ticketmaster.com.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Full Contact Fighter,
the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining the program now is welterweight contender John Fitch, fresh off a big victory over Luigi Ferravanti at the last UFC by rear naked choke in the second round. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Can't complain.
Good.
John, my first question for you is, what were your thoughts on the fight? I just watched it on UFC On Demand. It wasn't shown on the pay-per-view, and we'll maybe get into that in a minute. But first off, your thoughts on the fight and Luigi's performance?
You know, it was a pretty good fight. I feel like I didn't get to do as much damage as I'm used to in a fight, but that's all the credit to Luigi. You know, he had really good defense and was really, really good at not allowing me to ground and pound very well in the fight. I think we were kind of even on the stand-up, kind of just cutting angles on each other. But overall, it was a pretty good fight. I just beat him with positioning.
John, I was wondering, you're in a bit of an interesting situation now with the UFC. You're on an incredible roll, and your name is coming up again and again as being one of the top seeds to challenge at 170. And yet, your fights almost have exclusively been dark. So it must think that you must be kind of torn, because apparently now Marquardt's going to get a shot at Anderson Silva, although all of his fights have been dark. So is that like a good news, bad news scenario for you?
Yeah, I mean, I try not to get too caught up in that stuff. I mean, as long as I'm getting paid well, and, you know, I'm getting the opportunity to fight tough guys, you know, I'm going to be all right. Eventually they're going to have to start showing my fights, so I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, and, I mean, where do you think this puts you as far as the victory over Luigi, John? Where do you think, where would you put yourself in the welterweight rankings right now? Do you think you're within a fight, or do you think you should get a title shot right away?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I'm probably right behind Carlo Diego and Matt Hughes, behind Cynthia, but, you know, I'm ready to fight any of those guys, and it's just going to depend on who the UFC decides to put in front of me, so... I don't know what they have planned or what's going on.
What do you think, John? What do you think the best fight is for you in terms of in terms of your potential to win? And what do you think the best fight is for you of those list of people in terms of a potential incredible fight for fans?
I mean, there's so many good fighters out there. As long as everybody, you know, coming to put on a show, then I think the fans are going to love any fight. But, I don't know. I was thinking Carl would be the next logical step for me to take, just because he's ranked higher than me right now, but it looks like he's going to get a fight at Berkman, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air right now. I know I'm healthy, and I'm looking to get back in the cage as soon as I can.
John, let me ask you, For maybe fans who aren't as familiar with you, and as you mentioned, your fights aren't traditionally been shown on the pay-per-view portion, but the diehard fans are, of course, well aware of you. But for some of the people who aren't, I know that they mentioned on your fight, like I said, just watching it on UFC On Demand, that you recently were awarded your brown belt. So tell us a little bit about your jiu-jitsu instructor, and as well, the progression in your stand-up. Again, it looked like there was a more progression in your stand-up against Luigi. So tell us a little bit about your training at American Kickboxing Academy.
I mean, you know, Dave Camarillo is amazing on the ground. He's an amazing instructor. And some of the stuff he comes up with is just incredible. So I'm very lucky to have him around. And the resources, a lot of good fighters we have around, too. They, you know, when you're being put in danger on a daily basis on the ground, then your game's only going to skyrocket. With the hands, Lynn Schutz has been working my stand-up, along with some of the other trainers at AKA. You know, it's just a daily grind, trying to get everything to come together and get my stand-up, you know, better than anybody else's.
Well,
John, my second question for you is basically has to do with success of AKA, and that is, you see this with teams like Miletic now, or bigger camps with lots of fighters, American Top Team. You see a lot of fighters coming up in the same classes that basically train together and have similar successes. So the same as with you and Koscheck. What's going to happen when you guys rise to the top of the pile? A lot of fighters will say, "Yeah, I'll fight my friend because it's just a sport," and others, you know, basically explicitly refuse. So, what's your Koscheck situation in relation to that?
Well, me and Koscheck, we probably would never fight. It wouldn't be worth it to split our gym up, you know, to make two camps out of one camp, basically. So, all in all, the gym would suffer. But, you know, there's so many guys out there to fight. There's no reason for me to have to fight Koscheck. I think there's a lot of competitive guys out there, and it's hard for anybody to remain undefeated. So I'm not...
Does it make a difference that you both have sort of wrestling backgrounds, and it's not too odd in wrestling to fight people who you know well or who you train with?
No, I mean, come up with a wrestling background. We wrestle everybody, you know. I mean, you could be roommates and best friends with a guy and still have to wrestle him for the varsity spot. So it's not a competition thing like that. It's just, you know, the way the gym works and how everything works, we don't think it would be smart to put the gym through that. So, you know, we're happy just fighting other people now.
Right.
Well, let's break down some of these fights then. Of course, there's some pretty big welterweight fights coming up in UFC 6, April 7th UFC, there's a couple of great fights, and the Josh Koscheck and Diego Sanchez certainly has title shot contentions on it. What does Josh need to do, John, to beat Diego Sanchez, in your opinion? How is he going to win that fight?
Well, I mean, I when they first fought on the reality show, I had given Koscheck the win, you know, on my scorecard. So I think the things he's been doing just as he's growing as a fighter, I mean, his conditioning, he's getting some hands, his ground control. I mean, he didn't know anything in that first fight. And now he's a completely different guy. So, I mean, I don't see how Diego can be Koscheck.
Well, and we've had a few guys on the show that have openly said, publicly said that they think Josh Koscheck's wrestling is the best in the welterweight division and could very likely be the best in the UFC. Your thoughts, your former Purdue captain wrestling team, your thoughts on Josh's wrestling?
Oh, yeah, his wrestling is outstanding. When he wants to get the takedown, he's going to get it. And on top of that, his takedown defense is incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, my takedown game has gotten a ton better just the fact that I am training with Koscheck all the time now, and taking him down is a lot more difficult than most other people.
And so would you say that his, even though he's probably one of the best wrestlers, would you say that his wrestling also, and your wrestling, compare the two, how do they translate into MMA? It's not always the case that someone who's a superlative wrestler has the best wrestling for the purposes of MMA. So how would you rank yourself in terms of that?
Like me and Koscheck, we have a lot of different style with our wrestling for fighting. He's much more explosive than I am, but I'll lull you into sleep and get the easy takedown. But he's just so fast, like I could never match that speed. He can, you know, lift you in the air before you even know what's going on. So, like, it's definitely a difference in styles with being able to power through takedowns like that.
And Matt Hughes, of course, beating Chris Lytle on the same card that you just fought on. John, did you get a chance to see that fight? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did get to see that fight. I thought Chris did pretty well. He just basically got out positioned by Matt.
Yeah. Well, and the game plan that was employed by Matt, it looked somewhat different to the Matt Hughes that we've seen against BJ Penn, George St. Pierre, not really spending too much time on his feet at all, just going for the takedown. Is that kind of what you expected Matt to do, John?
Yeah, I kind of expected him to fight kind of like he did when he fought Shrewd. So, you know, after coming off of a loss, I think Matt is a little more conservative with his fights that are immediately after a loss. So
yeah.
I was expecting him to kind of not open up as much and get the same takedowns and that kind of thing.
And then George St. Pierre versus Matt Serra. We had Matt on the show earlier. Do you think some people are maybe looking past Matt Serra a little too much, John, or do you think that George St. Pierre should be that big of a favorite?
No, as good as guys are today, I mean, anybody can beat anybody on any given day. So, I mean, I don't like to see the odds that highly stacked against somebody like Matt, because he's incredible on the ground, and, I mean, you never know. He might have a trick up the sleeve that St. Pierre's never seen, so you can't count him out.
Mm-hmm.
John, one of the things I was wondering, going back to the importance of wrestling in MMA, what weight class do you think? We've seen strikers now have great success, like Chuck Liddell, who are good wrestlers and can stop wrestling takedowns. We've also seen excellent characters like Rashad Evans using their wrestling to dominate a 208. What weight class do you think wrestling plays the biggest role? So what weight class do you think a dominant wrestler can most effectively put wrestling to use?
Oh, man. Well, I think the heavyweight class, because if you're an outstanding heavyweight wrestler, you know, a lot of big guys don't have very good ground. I mean, it's rare to find a 250-pound guy as a black belt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So having a 250-pound wrestler who can take anybody down and put them on their back, I think it plays a huge role.
Do you think we just witnessed that last weekend?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you throw a little head movement on Randy, and you know, you throw punches over the top, and then hitting easy shots takes him down. So, yeah.
John, is it, your wrestling background, is it more of a freestyle wrestling background?
No, I wrestled at Purdue University, so it's a collegiate style.
Okay. So do you have any thoughts on that as far as the effectiveness, you know, with Jeff Munson? He was kind of shooting from the outside, and some people were saying before the fight with Sylvia and Couture that Randy would have a better chance, and you see people like Fedor Emelianenko sort of use those styles and get in clinch.
You noticed in the fight, like, I never really saw anybody fight Tim the way that Randy did. Most guys, they always try to come straight in at him. They come straight in to take straight shots. Everything's straight ahead of the guy. Until they get tired and Tim knocks him out. So, you know, people need to know, as bigger guys, you tend to want to take less risk shots and things that are sweeping or go to the outside so that they sprawl or whatever, the weight's not coming down on you. And you don't have to carry that weight, it's going to get you tired. But I don't know why your guys keep shooting straight in on Tim, but you see Randy actually is able to cut angles and get the takedowns this time.
What do you think the benefits and the drawbacks are from you know, it was interesting to see Randy actually shooting singles, and he comes from a more a sort of Greco-Roman background, and you see a lot of the guys from Quest are Greco-Roman guys. What do you think the specific advantages and disadvantages for Greco style versus freestyle wrestling are in MMA?
Well, the clinch work is a huge advantage to have. From Greco-Roman in fighting, if you know, if guys can take good judo, you can throw people anywhere at any time and tie that clinch, and you can keep yourself safe if you need to rest or recover. But with the freestyle, you need the shot defense as well. So I think that the Greco guys suffer because they don't get the shot defense work that a lot of the freestyle guys do.
Yeah. Well, I want to know for a little bit about your own life as far as in the UFC, John. I know last time we were on the show, you mentioned the fact that you moved up to California. You wanted to have an MMA career. You do this full time. You've got 5 wins in a row now in the UFC. Are you where you wanted to be so far in your career, John? Is everything at the point where you expected it to be when you made the big move and dedicated your life to MMA?
I mean, so far, going according to plan. I'd be happy with where I'm at right now and how things are going, you know. So, like, I kind of trip out because it's weird. I didn't think, you know, 4 years ago that this would really be happening, but it is. So I'm really happy about that.
And are you starting to get recognized a little bit? Have you seen the effects of the reality show, et cetera, and your UFC fights? Do you get noticed a little bit?
Nothing too crazy yet. I mean, you know, people recognize you at the arena you just fought in, you know, but... You know, walking down the street or in the grocery store, I don't get too many people knowing who I am or anything. I haven't been on TV or anything yet.
So is there some resentment against Josh then for that very reason? You know, that guy was on the
reality show. I don't need those kind of problems.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question, because you guys are basically a study in contrast. You have the same weight class, same gym, same amount of experience. How is his life harder than your life right now? Him coming from a reality show, him having this popular TV exposure, and you basically being having less of that in terms of the popular public.
Well, I mean, it's just the fight money for one. You know, him by being on that TV show, he's getting paid less for these fights right now until that contract is up.
Yeah.
So I dodged the bullet actually with that, and then you know, some of the sponsors haven't been paying, so. I think that's a problem he's having right now too.
So there's no, you kind of sounds to me like you're not envious of him perhaps getting recognized more. You'd rather sort of remain to yourself, John, and live more of the quiet life.
If you have a choice over wealth or fame, take wealth. Fame doesn't pay.
Yeah, see, we have those problems as Full Contact Fighter Radio host, John. I don't know if you're aware, but I have to sweep aside autograph seekers with bodyguards, a whole entourage. It's ridiculous, man.
And the girls throwing themselves at you.
Yeah, totally. You know, if they just recognize my voice, if you know, I say hey, right away, it's unbelievable, man. It's
the golden smog.
Yeah.
And I'm just really good looking and super rich, so.
Right. Yeah. Well, do you have anything else for John Brennan?
That's it, John. Congratulations, and hopefully we get to see you a little bit more on TV, but not so much that you have Josh Koscheck-esque problems.
Yeah. I don't need those kind of problems.
All right, John. Well, congratulations once again, and we look forward to your next fight, whenever that may be.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, John.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. Some interesting comments from both Mr. John Fitch and Mr. Matt Serra. And, Brennan and Matt did not care to hear about the interview with Tim Sylvia. And like I said, I couldn't remember specific quotes, so I encourage anyone to go to the archives, www.fcfighter.com. Check out the archives, listen to the interviews yourself. But, yeah, and, you know, Brennan, you of course, I'm sure, easily remember that interview with Tim. I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if Matt Serra does get past George St. Pierre and does become the champion. That matchup against Matt Hughes, you get the sense, would have a lot of ill tidings involved.
Well, yeah, I think everyone wants to see that match anyway, you know. Mm-hmm. If Mark Lehman's not going to come out, you know, and fight Matt Serra, then Matt Hughes is the second best. So I think maybe that would be a fight that would be interesting for them to make, and it's unfortunate that we actually may not get to see it.
Well, in the interview with Matt, he mentioned that he didn't think George St. Pierre was necessarily someone to take him lightly, that he's not an arrogant guy, that he's not that kind of fighter, but that, you know, maybe he wouldn't push himself the same way he would with Matt Hughes. What's your sense of that, Brendan? I mean, we had George St. Pierre on the program, and of course he said everything that he should as a fighter. He's going to take Matt Serra extremely serious. He's going to train the hardest he ever has. That this is the most dangerous fight of his career. Knowing George St. Pierre and seeing him fight, Brendan, what's your thoughts on that? Is he the kind of fighter that is going to prepare fully for this fight with Matt Serra?
It could work two ways for Matt Serra. You know, it could have been that St. Pierre was completely focused on gaining the title and avenging his loss to Hughes, but it also could have been that he was also really nervous for the Hughes fight and wasn't fighting up to his maximum potential, because Hughes, as well known, is kind of a bully fighter, right? So, you know, I could see St. Pierre, especially having a loss under his belt to Hughes, being a little bit anxious. So the worst case scenario, I think, for Matt Serra is going to be that now St. Pierre has the same skill level, the same stamina, and is completely relaxed and is going to, you know, bring his A game that will unleash some kind of unforeseen fury on Serra, and it could be the worst of all possible nights for him.
Brett, I want to get your thoughts on the UFC 68, but first I'm just going to jump into the mailbag here, and I don't know if you heard this
show. Did we get a mailbag?
Yeah, we had a mailbag last show, and like I said with Wombat when he's on the program, generally speaking, we do get some emails and people compliment the show or et cetera, and that's great, and of course we love hearing that. But usually I usually just try to read the more, you know, actual questions and points of discussion, et cetera. And in regards to Tim, he sent in an email about the glove holding issue with Haritonov and Mike Russo. He responds to some of the things Wombat just said on the last show. Anyways, here's Tim's email. It says, "Hi, Wombat comment on fighters holding gloves. During Couture versus Sylvia, McCarthy says to Sylvia, don't hold the gloves. I've even seen Pride refs say to fighters during the fight, no holding gloves. I've even seen refs slap the fighter's hand for holding the opponent's gloves. Fighters are allowed to hold the wrist, but not the glove itself. Tim, California." So, you know, and Tim's obviously, that's correct. It's a good point that no one really knows what Russo was complaining to Haritonov about in regards to the armbar, etc. And it's all speculation at this point, but Brennan, do you have any thoughts on that as far as the holding gloves issue? Do you think it happens more than perhaps it's sort of up to different referees? Some referees scrutinize it more than others?
Well, it really makes no sense to say in some respects you can't hold the glove, because the glove is basically not the thing you're holding, but the thing that's preventing your hand from slipping off the guy's hand, especially if you sink in you sink in an arm bar if you're trying to fight an arm loose in an arm bar or something like that, or you're trying to secure a Kimura, then you've already got something to stop your hand. It's like holding on to, I think Wombat mentioned this, it's like holding on to a baseball bat. So if you're holding on to a baseball bat, if there was a rule against holding on to the end, well, when you're actually gripping a baseball bat and swinging, are you holding on to the end, or is the end preventing your hands from coming off the shaft of the bat? So I think you see that constantly, and that's one of the challenges of one of the difficulties with being able to fight someone off when they're wearing those little gloves is that you can't actually, when you're slick, you can't actually slip your hand out in the way you normally would if you're just grappling.
Yeah.
But holding the glove, I don't know why, you know, apart from the fact that you can actually grip the glove, I don't know what benefit you'd have holding the glove, that you'd necessarily have holding the glove anyway, unless you're using the two-hand, you know, unless you're using the two hands actually to, say, for instance, in a rear naked choke defense, if you're using your two hands to prepare for a sweep and actually grasping on, you know, to the glove, but I don't think it's a really big issue, and in that fight in particular, I don't think it was a really big issue necessarily, you know, certainly nothing to complain so profusely about, and you know, I think in MMA. In MMA, you see a lot of different stuff. I remember and sometimes fighters are more candid than others. If you remember the Rampage Lindland fight, when Lindland had one of his infamous Lindland teens in on Rampage. You know, and Rampage is twisting away at his fingers and trying to claw his way out of that. You know, Lindland basically, you know, the small digit manipulation is illegal technically, but you know, Lindland sort of took that as par for the course. Is that's something that happens and something that people do. So to say that someone holding your glove is, you know, it deserves some kind of terrible retribution, worse than, you know, prying your little finger off trying to get out of a guillotine, then I don't know. You know, I think it's something that there's sort of unspoken practice between fighters, to transgressions of the rules that are just sort of considered accepted practice, and if you sort of violate the confidence of other fighters by complaining about things like that, then, you know, I don't know if that endears you to them, I certainly would suspect it doesn't.
You know, there's not a lot going on this weekend. There's a King of the Cage, I guess there's a K-1 Heroes coming up around the corner. Not a lot going on. There's a little bit of a lull here. You had a back-to-back huge UFC event and Pride event. So I guess in that respect, there's no reason not to discuss the UFC 68. And like I mentioned off the top of the show, your legions of fans want to hear your thoughts, no doubt. So let's get into it, Brendan. First fight I wanted to get your thoughts on, and we talked a little bit about it with John Fitch, Matt Hughes and his performance against Chris Lytle. What are your thoughts on that fight?
I think I've heard from both fighters, and you know, Lytle was fairly disappointed that he couldn't do more. He was basically being smothered on the ground, and I think Hughes had to win the fight. There was no question. You know, after losing to St. Pierre and losing in such a devastating way, he had to win the fight. And I don't know why anyone was surprised with his game plan. Certainly, I wasn't. I thought that's exactly what he was going to do. He's going to come on and, you know, he's going to come out and lay on Lytle for three rounds, if he could, as soon as he could, and as long as he could. And a lot of people were, a lot of fans, I think, were upset because there wasn't more standing up. But Hughes did, you know, to his credit, have dominant positions, and you don't actually see in the UFC many stand-ups from dominant positions like side control and things like that. So I wasn't surprised at all. The fight was terribly boring. Yeah, sure it was, but I wasn't surprised by it whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only chance Lytle had was the guillotine, because it became abundantly clear early on that he wasn't going to be able to stop Matt as far as takedowns went. And Matt Hughes has got really good jiu-jitsu as well and a great solid ground game. So I think if he was going to get caught, it would probably be that kind of scenario, guillotine off a takedown attempt. I thought Lytle deserves some credit for hanging in there like he did, and you know, hopefully I'd like to see him back, but I'm not sure that's going to be the case. He's been around the UFC for a while. He's got quite a few losses on his record, and the UFC welterweight division is so deep that I don't know. What do you think, Brennan, aside from you know, personal wishes, and Chris Lytle is obviously a nice guy and an entertaining fighter to watch. Is the UFC going to retain his services, do you think?
I think. I don't think the UFC is in the position of letting anyone go. They have so many shows. They have two organizations now, WEC and UFC. I can't see them letting a fighter like Lytle go. And, No, I can't see it. I just can't see it. When's the last time a really good caliber fighter has been let go by the UFC?
Well, I think you'll probably see him go to WEC. You mentioned the next WEC card is looking great, actually, and that there's going to be definitely some opportunities to get some of the guys competing on that card coming up on the 24th, I believe. Johnny Alessio, Joe Riggs, Carlos Condit. There's some great fights. But anyways, let's get into Jason McDonald and Rich Franklin. You picked Jason McDonald. Who did you pick in Lytle and Hughes? You picked Hughes, right? Yeah.
I can't remember. I think I went all with upsets.
No, I don't think so. I think you went with Hughes, but you did go with McDonald against Franklin. Your thoughts on that fight, Jason, in the Northern Touch on a full contact fighter, my Canadian column, he makes some comments about the fact that he didn't quit, that there's some speculation that he quit or he told his corner to throw in the towel, and makes that abundantly clear in his comments to me that wasn't the case. But your thoughts on that fight?
Yeah, first, my thoughts on why on earth that's a controversy is it's asinine. How can you? He was blind in one eye. How would he benefit by continuing on? He basically clawed his way to the corner. How on earth would he benefit by going in and fighting a third round? Getting a medical suspension by being heinously knocked out for 4 months or even worse. So, if you can't see out of one eye, you can't see out of one eye. And that's the whole. I guess that it's ironic that there's a stigma of brutality surrounding MMA, but it's profoundly civilized because you say I can't fight anymore and the fight's over, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing disgraceful about that, and it's a perfectly honorable way to end a fight. Basically same as tapping out. So are you a great fighter or a man if you allow your arm to be snapped off, or you need to be blown out because you won't submit. So it's asinine. So
well, in his post fight comments, McDonald said that in the FCF article that they expected Franklin to be a little bit more assertive, a little bit more aggressive, and then in fact, Rich came out with a very somewhat conservative game plan, really countered Jason McDonald's takedown attempts well, and sort of got the pound out kind of victory. Did that surprise you at all, Brendan?
I actually, as much as I'm a fan of Jay, I think this is the fight where his nerves really showed in the UFC, and his game plan I think looked really terrible. I don't know if he didn't execute it properly, but what he was doing in the ring was basically pursuing that takedown, to the detriment of his stand-up, to the detriment of his own health. And then even when he over-pursued takedowns, so if he even did drag, when he did inevitably drag Franklin to the ground, he ended up in a terrible position. So, it's not like Franklin's a dog on the ground and has never trained jiu-jitsu, so you don't give up, just to get on the ground, you don't give up a submissive position. If you're a ground wizard fighting some dog, then maybe you can do that, but it's worse than pulling guard, because he ended up in terrible positions on the ground, and that's where he got pounded. So it really looked like he lost all confidence in his stand-up. He didn't set up his shots. His takedowns looked awkward and desperate, and I think that's the unfortunate thing is that looked like what was in his mind. I've got to get the takedown. You've got to have confidence in I think he lost all confidence in his other capacities, and really that's where he should have been. I think he should have been more focused, is putting together a more coherent game. And if you're going to have successful takedowns against Franklin, it's going to be because he's in trouble in some other aspect of his game, right? And McDonald didn't look like he was concerned with putting Franklin in trouble in any other way. So it was actually that was a very disappointing fight to watch.
Well, and afterwards, Franklin, in his post-fight interview with Joe Rogan, made mention of the fact that they're talking about a title fight against Anderson Silva taking place in Cincinnati. But now comes word that it sounds like Nate Marquardt and Anderson Silva are signed to fight, and I haven't actually seen a UFC confirmation of that, but there's I've heard several people comment that fight is going to happen. And to me, Brendan, I know I've talked to you about this in the past, I think that's great. I personally think that they should give another fight, Anderson Silva, another title defense before the rematch with Rich Franklin. What are your thoughts on all this?
You think they should give Anderson Silva another fight before
Rich
Franklin?
It does sound like he could be fighting Nate Marquardt before the rematch with Franklin.
You know, I think it all depends, you know, and really that's where the promoters have to come in and say, but does anyone have any legitimate right to a rematch? I don't think necessarily. No, not at all. So you got to work your way back up when you get knocked down. I'd like to see Anderson Silva defending his title against someone else. But really, this is more of a promotional thing than any question that has to do with justice or desserts or anything like that. You know, you lose your title, you could lose it forever. You may not ever get another shot. So if the fans want to see that fight, and the UFC will decide when the best time and place is to have that fight. And if they don't, then it won't happen. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I think Wombat had a lot of good points on that as well last show, just saying that, you know, the UFC desperately wants to have an English-speaking, very popular person like Rich Franklin become the champion again. No matter how much Anderson Silva seems like a nice guy and he's very entertaining, that they'd like to get that fight. But I personally think that the payoff is going to be much greater, especially if Anderson Silva can beat Nate Marquardt, and that's going to be a great fight on its own. Marquardt's going to give him a lot of trouble, I think. But if that is what happens, and he has to defeat Marquardt first before fighting Franklin again, I think in the long run, that fight will have that much more hype behind it.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I kind of disagree with Wombat on that. I think 2 years ago, that was definitely the case with the UFC, where they needed fighters who were crowd friendly, who people could relate with, but now I think really they're profoundly focused on getting the best of the best. And I know Dana White said that a couple different times. And the question is, you know, do their actions reflect that? They didn't have to bring in Anderson Silva. No one was clamoring down the door for them to bring him in. They knew his potential. They knew what he could do, and they did it. And now he's the champion.
Well, it certainly does seem like,
you know, the same thing goes with Krokop.
Yeah.
You know, do you bring Krokop in, knowing that you have to have an American heavyweight champion? No.
No. Well, it certainly does seem like when they show Anderson Silva at different events, or just the reception that he received in his fight against Travis Luter, etc., it seems like he's been well received by MMA fans, I think, because he does seem like a very nice guy, carries himself well, he's not cocky, and he's extremely entertaining to watch. So.
Well, the guy's a walking highlight reel.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You've seen, you know, if you think of, if you think of some of the ways that Silva has ended fights, I'm just trying to think of the last. I saw a Cage Rage on TV the other day where he had some kind of. Who is he fighting? It was a former UFC guy. Some kind of crazy fake elbow, reverse elbow.
Yeah, it was Anthony Fricklin, wasn't it?
It was the Fricklin fight. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know? And you just don't see. You know, you just don't see stuff like that. So the potential for him to be the 185 champion is vast. And I think the more and more people get educated, the more and more people are coming along. I was actually very surprised at the crowd response in Columbus, apart from the booing of Silva when he came in for the ring. I was actually surprised with the near appropriate applause and response to most of the fights during the night.
Well, I don't really know what that means, but Randy Couture.
They weren't booing when fights went to the ground. They weren't booing. You know, they weren't booing at inappropriate times. They weren't booing, you know, when someone was on the ground for over a minute, you know, with side control and things like that.
It was obviously a very well-informed, educated MMA crowd.
Well, and that was very surprising to me. And maybe that's what has to happen, is that maybe that's where you're going to get.
Why is that surprising?
You know, one of the things that
we have a lot of fans in the Midwest, buddy. You look at the FCF Radio, MySpace, lots of fans in the Midwest.
Yeah, well, I know, and maybe that's the difference between the Midwest and the South. You know, that Mississippi show, one of the things, the Elite XE show, one of the things that was awkward to watch it and made it actually a bad production is that they had mic'd the crowd, and the crowd was just ridiculous. You know, it's clear that they knew absolutely nothing about MMA.
Well, I mean, it's hard to make generalizations, though, because you never really know who the makeup of the crowd is on any given night. I mean, you could have two tour buses come in full of loaded morons, and that can make a huge difference, or, you know what I mean? So it's hard to make generalizations about one crowd per se in a certain area. I mean, you never know.
Yeah, that's true. And Vegas was another good example. You know, Vegas was the Las Vegas show in the UFC was terrible for you know inappropriate crowd responses.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. We're running out of time, but let's get into it. We were both dead wrong. Tim Sylvie running Couture. Couture showing a great head movement, a great stand up, setting up his takedowns, just a brilliantly executed game plan. Man, that fight, the feeling that I had at my place, we had several people over watching it. That was one of those fights I've been telling people, like, I'll never forget where I was watching that fight, and I don't think anyone else will be for that matter. Brendan, that was unbelievable.
I could just picture you, Kelsey, sitting on your couch, you know, watching your 12-inch black-and-white television with tears streaming down your face, saying, did Randy Couture actually win? I can't really see.
Yeah, I'm a pretty emotional guy. Actually, we just listened to it on the radio. I don't even have a TV, so.
Yeah, I listened to that radio broadcast as well. I was, out at a dinner party, so.
No, but honestly,
one of those Homer Simpson in church. So, how are things going, Brendan? Beat him down! Get up! Listen to the radio in my ear. Yeah.
You're losing me here.
Sorry.
But yeah, no, I mean, unbelievable. Your thoughts on Couture and looking down the pipe, if Krokop gets by Gonzaga, based on Randy's performance against him, your thoughts how he matches up against Krokop now?
It will be very interesting because that's kind of the bittersweet of Couture's victory. You know, again, I think it was really kind of a historic moment. I think for old farts like Randy Couture and myself, number one. And the fact that when you're approaching or over 40, people can actually do useful things in their lives, number one. But number two, I think it's got to be bittersweet for Randy because, you get the accolades from winning that, but then you also get the wonderful opportunity of having to fight Krokop in your next fight. So, I think Krokop could be set up to be a Krokop, I think the story is now better because a lot of fans I knew were just waiting and biding their time until they could see Krokop taking Tim Sylvie out, and I think everyone was looking forward to that. And now the brakes have been put on that fight, and everyone's thoughts have turned 180 degrees. Is Krokop now going to be the greatest heel in UFC history if he brutally decimates Randy Couture? So. Are we going to see Randy's unbelievable popularity now turn to tragedy if he suffers a sort of Vanderlei-esque knockout at the hands of Krokop?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing is certainly clear is this win for the UFC. I mean, the sport is huge. I mean, the UFC has never been more popular. Of course, it's all well documented. But now you've got Randy Couture as your heavyweight champion, arguably the second or most popular fighter in North America, and you've got Chuck Liddell as your light heavyweight champion. I can't think of a better way for the UFC to start out 2007. This year, I mean, the Krokop-Randy Couture fight, if it happens, has the potential, Brendan, to be just unbelievably profitable, unbelievably popular. I mean, this could really, really finally, firmly entrench mixed martial arts on the mainstream media map.
Yeah, I think if Randy stays healthy and if he's ready to go, and I think if Krokop dispatches Gonzaga in a brutal and efficient way, then this fight is going to be, if you think the UFC is 90% hype now, I think it's going to ramp up to 99% hype and then possible tragic outcomes. You can't write Randy off, right? You can't ever write him off now. Now he's proven that you can't ever write him off. But if there is a fighter who has the potential to decimate him, it's certainly Krokop. So.
Yeah, but I just think you look at it, and if he were to be Krokop, or even if he doesn't, I mean, you look at the plot, you look at the story that has unfolded in that man's life now, Randy Couture, and honestly, you could see easily in 20 years now, perhaps I sound melodramatic, but a movie. I mean, it's like a movie, you know? You could see in 10, 15, 20 years a movie called The Natural or whatever, and it's Randy Couture's life, and it's an unbelievable story.
And if gained a bunch of weight and got less cut, I'd be perfect to play him.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. I don't know. I'm not sure if I see that, but I think you could probably be like the hot dog vendor in the back or something like that. And plus, I've seen you try to act, so that's probably the range of your capabilities. But
I appreciate that, Kelsey. Hot dog vendor, eh?
Yeah.
What about Randy's aging Parkinsonian father?
Yeah, maybe you could fill that role too. I could see. I don't know, man. I can't really see you acting, you know. But that's just.
What are you talking about? I act like a boring Canadian on this radio show all the time.
True. And you fit the part quite well.
Yeah. On the contrary, I'm actually a very dynamic personality and animated voice.
Right. Well, on that note, Brendan, before we lull any other listeners into sleep, let's call it a night, buddy. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
And you, Kelsey, good to talk to you.